Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Story Break.
I think you mean another morning edition of Story Break.
Not again.
Aren't we always morning edition now?
This is a. So I found Morning Edition did fan covers. So this is a bluesy fan cover of the Morning Edition theme by Josh Sclair.
Turn that off, man.
It's terrible.
That actually didn't get me pumped up. We gotta do the real Morning Edition music. I took a bet on that one. Where is it? Where is it? I need my hit. I need to get my morning fucking gone here.
While Will looks for the Morning Edition theme song, which is not our theme song, by the way. Oh no.
All right, everybody, grab your coffee, settle in, because it's time for another episode of Story Break.
Kind of guffed the
Yeah, I
kind of
needed to talk a little bit more. From beautiful Burbank, California.
So, okay. Story Break is a podcast where Will, Matt, and myself, we sit down and we tackle a topic, a thought, a noun, some unadaptable idea, and we kind of, you know, throw our weight into it and give it a shot to try and take that said idea and turn it into what a story for a, you know, TV show or a movie.
So much of Hollywood is now existing IPs that the job of the writer is more the job of the alchemist to turn the into the adapted, to take something, to reach into the cultural zeitgeist and pull out whatever raw material you can find, be it a cereal brand, be it a video game, and forge it into a narrative capable of supporting a $200 million movie franchise.
This podcast actually came out from Freddie reading The Secret, and with Rocket Jump desperately needing new projects, he decided that the best way to do it is just to put out ideas into the ether and hope that Kellogg's or Star Wars just comes to us after hearing this brilliant podcast.
Or scented candles, as it may be. Every single week, we are also accompanied by the scent. So for those of you who want to smell along at home, Will, what do we have as far as the candle goes?
We haven't bought any new ones.
We need to buy some new ones. We need to work that into the show budget. But today we're burning Spruce by a Shop 815. That's Shoppe 815. I got this at Guerrilla Atelier, a fancy man store in downtown, in the Arts District downtown.
If I recall, that's the only double-digit dollar sign item in the entire store. Is that
correct?
No.
Yeah. Usually you're dropping pretty serious bills when you go into Guerrilla Atelier. But this candle was it was just $35. It apparently burns for 85 hours, and it has a really wonderful little sprucey scent.
Yeah. It's like 40 cents an hour. Is that?
Yeah. So we're. Worth it? I like a forest scent because it makes me feel like we're hunters and that we have stepped into the wild to track down and chase this beast and slay it and bring it back to the camp that is Hollywood.
Okay, so this week,
because I feel good about that intro bit. That's pretty good, guys.
Oh God,
go
fantastic, Matt. I'm glad you're on board. This week, let's talk a little bit about we got a call.
Who's our client this week? Who came to the Story Boys to have their idea broken wide open?
Story Boys.
I need to double check.
Is that the new name of the podcast? Did I just rename the co-op podcast?
I need to check who owns it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Hasbro, the bros at Hasbro.
Transformers.
Sorry.
Thundercats.
I'm afraid none of those things. They're giving another crack at it. Monopoly, the board game Monopoly. What is the movie/TV show that you can do around America's beloved capitalism classic
Monopoly,
a game that nobody plays right?
Liam Neeson is the thimble. Jennifer Lawrence is a sack of money.
So very quickly, for the maybe 1% of you who don't know what Monopoly is a board game where you have, you know, your various weird household items as pieces, and you buy property, you go around the board.
Monopoly is the worst board game ever designed, and everyone hates each other by the time. It was actually, I feel like I remember reading somewhere that Monopoly was actually designed as a commentary on how shitty capitalism is. Like, it's supposed to break down and be miserable by
the end. Also great is, I believe and maybe this is where we can take the movie. Well, before we get to that, I'm just going to say that Lionsgate, our fine folks at Lionsgate, supposedly were teaming up with Hasbro to make Monopoly in 2015. So clearly this went away. And they were going to get Andrew Niccol of the writer of The Truman Show to write the screenplay.
Oh, shit.
So Andrew fucked up, clearly. Andrew biffed it, clearly. And now they've just come to some real professionals.
Finally.
here to try to figure it out.
Oh my god, this guy has credits, dude. Yeah, Gattaca, Andrew Nichols is a freaking Truman genius. Show, The Terminal, Lord of War. Yeah, I did In Time.
For those who don't know, Truman Show and Gattaca are two of my favorite movies. So this guy's a master.
Yeah. Okay. So where he has failed?
Well, this is still in production. So let's just say that, you know, maybe their confidence has been shaken in Andrew's take, and they want to bring in some new heat just in case they've got the wrong idea.
All right. So what I was going to say is I believe the history of Monopoly, if I'm going to get this correct, I think a woman made it, Elizabeth Maggie Phillips, who created the game in hoping to explain single tax theory. And I believe that a guy...
That's how good games start, by
I feel
way.
Like she was on her guy, own...
My, like, this is the thing, is I believe a guy stole her game and then made a Monopoly and made tons of money from it. And she never got credited for it. So
I feel like she was on her own 1930s podcast about adapting economic theories into board games. And then she was like, all right, we'll call it Monopoly.
Because she took a patent out in her game. It was called The Landlord's Game.
That's right, yeah.
Not as good a name. It's all about branding.
I mean, that's why the guy took it. So then Charles Todd Phillip recalled the day in 1932. Yeah, he took the game and made a Monopoly.
So I think real quick, just to be clear, I don't think we should talk about. Well, so real quick, there is a very easy layup, like historical period piece about the birth and creation.
Oh, no.
The founder or whatever. Like
That's the easy one.
That's a lot over the plate. Yeah, whatever. You said it in that time period. It's about the real true story about America's most popular board game and the intrigue and the, man, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, whatever. That's lame, boring. Don't care about that. We care about Monopoly, the IP. We care about Monopoly Uncle Moneybags.
We care about the Monopoly Man. Where everyone gets their image of what a rich old white guy looks like is the Monopoly Man.
Is it Uncle Moneybags? Is that his name?
Uncle Moneybags? Is
yeah,
that it?
So yeah.
Let's look. What is the Monopoly? Is there no Wikia for Monopoly?
There is.
Where's the
Monopolypedia or whatever? Like
Thimblepedia? Monopoly character. So Uncle Moneybags.
So there's Uncle Moneybags.
Rich Uncle Money. Wait, here's my rich Uncle Pennybags.
Pennybags.
Which seems bizarre because Moneybags like does those... it, but saying rich Pennybags, it's like they named him Pennybags, and like, well, that doesn't sound like he's rich, so let's just call him Rich Uncle Pennybags. I love the thought of that.
That seems like one of those cultural, like play it again, Sam, or beat me up, Scotty, where like just for years, like it's like, no, it's not Uncle Moneybags, it's Rich Uncle Pennybags. Like, and it's just, he has bags of money, like you think it's Uncle Moneybags.
Oh, and then in 1999, he was renamed Mr. Monopoly. Rich Uncle Pennybags is pretty great, though.
It's that adjective word salad of just like, wait, what else?
And the police officer in the go to jail is named Officer Mallory.
And the guy Mallory's so we could do like a Wolf of Wall Street thing.
Yeah, and the guy that's in prison is called Jake the Jailbird.
Okay,
so clearly this is the story of how a rich Uncle Pennybags became rich, like how he acquired his fortune.
It feels like a rags to riches, like American upon a time in America.
Wolf of Wall Street, Pixar's version of the Wolf of Wall Street, essentially.
It's tough because he seems
like a dick.
No,
he's kind of cute looking.
Yeah,
like,
he seems
like
so
little,
happy.
It's like,
he owns all of the boardwalks.
Like you look at that compared, like if you Google Charles Foster Kane, compare the two of them, it's like Pennybag seems pretty happy with his money, like he's pretty well off, and he's an uncle, which implies that he's got a family, and he's got probably nieces and nephews that all look up to him.
That's true. If I do recall from the various chance and community chess cards, there do appear to be like
let's get into some of those chance and community chess cards.
Right. So like I'm trying to think of like what is the iconography we can draw upon. We have the game itself. We have the various properties. It's clearly set in like New Jersey, right? Like that's something I actually didn't even realize growing up. You know, it's like
I thought it was New York, but yeah,
New Jersey. You know, it's like Marvin Gardens and all that stuff. It's like no, these are all actual things. The Reading Railroad, for as those anybody from the Northeast would correct you.
So wait, what city is it?
But everybody else, really quick, by the way, what right? Do you call it the Reading Railroad?
Oh, I found the Monopoly Wiki, by the way.
Wait, what? And what city? Sorry, what city were you saying it is?
It's somewhere. It's New Jersey, I think. Right?
Okay.
Because they're all. Well, what I was going to say it's Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Okay. Oh, geez. Okay. Well, that's like a shitty city. Sorry. That's a hard one to do. That's a
what?
Donald Trump. Atlantic City is like got a lot of issues.
Yeah, but it's like Boardwalk Empire, dude. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's why. So there's a perfect setting for something. There's
but wait, I was gonna say
the glitz, the, maybe, the glamour, the desperation, well, the crime. Say,
maybe you won't. Maybe you won't like this obstruction I won't put on us. But like, I feel like. I feel like rich white guys have it pretty tough right now. I feel like I feel like we got our Donald Trumps, we got our Charles Foster Kane. I'm just saying that the very easy thing to do would be to do the fall of an emperor, right? That's what every story is like. Here's what I want.
Oh, like King Lear with Mr. Monopoly, essentially.
No, I was just saying that's the easy thing to do. I was saying
Rich Uncle Pennybags. We'll get it right.
I'm sorry.
Rich Uncle Pennybags seems like can this be the millionaire and like. And like Annie, can this not be a Charles Foster Kane? Can this be the guy that Donald Trump should aspire to be rather Ooh. Than a metaphor?
So we're going to reappropriate the stereotype of the rich old white guy.
Yeah. Like let's make a good, like what, like let's try to make the good version of it. I'm just saying like, cause yes, it would
what
be pretty
all
easy.
Good things rich old white men do.
I'm not saying we have to do this obstruction. I'm just saying it'd be pretty easy to do. Let's just
I agree. I don't want him to be an anti-hero. I want
exactly.
him to be. You want like, it to be like a Frank Capra movie.
Yeah,
or something.
And he still has things to learn. I believe in Annie. He's like he needs the love of a child. He needs that sounds wrong, but he needs to like learn family again and whatnot. You know, this is like we're like in the 1950s here. It's like okay, so let's try to come up with because I just like he just seems so happy.
By the way, I
just don't want Rich Ungie Penel. I just don't want Rich Ungie Pennybaggies to be sad.
Yeah,
at
like
the end
some
of this.
Sociopathic piece of shit. Yeah,
yeah, because that would definitely be the. He's like a Scrooge McDuck. Looking at Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
Well, so Scrooge is kind of an interesting character because, and I'd love to see where
Scrooge
they take
McDuck
him.
Is not the same as Scrooge.
Yeah, but right. He's saying Scrooge. He means he's just calling him by his Christian name, Scrooge.
Okay,
yeah, fine. Yeah. Well, I'm saying he's an interesting character, and I'm curious to see where they take him in the new DuckTales reboot. But right, it's like the story of that's basically it's like the kids come and live with their uncle, and he's just like a rich jet setting adventurer, like archaeologist type, right? He's yeah. kind of find out he's like an Indiana Jones uncle, sort of, right? That's kind of what it gets down to.
What I was gonna say is like it could be. So maybe Rich Uncle Pennybag. Uncle, like I'm thinking he's not married.
Not
right?
No.
He's got nieces and nephews. Maybe he doesn't know them. So yeah, maybe it's like a story of a guy who
Ooh.
Needs family.
What about this?
Okay.
Mr. Rich Uncle Pennybags.
Yeah.
He is this billionaire tycoon gadfly, yeah. right? You know, not a tuppence to this not a tuppence to the poor driving around in his millionaire car and then yeah. in his little tin car in the 1930s.
It's very long tin car.
What if you do like your classic like a corporate intrigue gone wrong thing where he gets ousted from the board, like there's like he gets robbed of all of his money, or he has it all in the stock market in 1929, right? Uh-huh. And then there's the crash and he loses everything, right? And there's like some sort of like it's almost like a Count of Monte Cristo, like someone on the board betrayed him, like his protege stabbed him in the back, mm-hmm. and now he's just this pitiful old man on the streets of New York, and he's got to rise back to the top, but this time he's gonna like you learn something,
so,
you know. I don't know.
Just because we're real quick, just because it's part of it, there is a world where you do this as like a Count of Monte Cristo. Where does he go? He gets sent to jail. He's got to break out.
And he's always
revenge.
It's like he's always had his get out of jail free card because he's been a man of privilege, but not this time.
Incidentally, well, while you said maybe you're elected chairman of the board, I was looking at the chance cards. There is a chance card that is you are elected chairman of the board, which causes you to have to pay each player.
There's a community. Well, okay, so here just to maybe throw some other stuff out there.
Yeah.
So there's some great community chess cards. There's Grand Opera Night, so we could definitely do an opera scene. There's your again the get out of jail free.
I think this is pre-World War II. I think it's not post-World War II, Matt.
Huh?
The game?
Yeah, I think the setting of this movie, right? It's like I think it's flapper era, like 20s, maybe depression era. You know, I think there's
more. Well, I was gonna say, so first off, do you guys know what the original six pieces are?
What?
There's a lot. Well, it's a thimble, a top hat, an iron, a shoe. And then there's the battleship and the cannon. And that feels weird. It's because they're from the game Conflict, which failed. So they just took the pieces and added it to there. But what I was going to say is I'm trying. A lot of times I like to work backwards. I'm just trying to think, like, how do you get, like, because what I'm seeing is like, I'm seeing a guy who's like forgotten how he got to where he is. And like, it would be like he opens up, like he finds the old toy box or something from his past when he was in Depression era, when he was poor, and he opens up and he finds his mother's thimble and the old iron and like a torn shoe and a picture of his dog or something.
That's
and
incredible.
It's, and it's like, and he remembers like how he got here in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to
like
go
a
back.
Like a flashback.
So I'm trying to think, like, how do you get those pieces in? Like, how do you get the Monopoly pieces in? It's like, yeah, it's this guy who's like, he lived through the Depression. He never wanted to be poor again. He remembers his like dad's like struggling.
Oh, there's totally a world where it's like his dad, it's like a funeral, and it's like the remembrance of objects, almost like Slumdog Millionaire-esque.
Yeah.
Where like each question takes you back. It's like each object takes you back to some like formulative moment in his life.
Okay, so it is Citizen Kane, but it's about rich Uncle Pennybags. Yeah. But it's like a redemption story.
Like he's going to remember. So it's a little Scrooge, like somebody that's gonna has to remember like the heart, his heart, and like how he got here in the first place. Why is this? I imagine he's kind of like a miser.
Oh, by the way, if it's a battleship, he totally fought on a battleship in the war.
Yeah, it'd be like a toy battle. Yeah. I was thinking it was like a toy battleship.
Or it was a toy battleship, and it would be the gift that his dad gave him right before his dad went off to join the Navy.
Oh, yeah,
and then his dad died and left poor mother penniless. And then it was up to him because he had the brains.
That's what it was. He started being an entrepreneur to take care of his mom after his dad went off to the war and didn't come back. So he had this. Well, start with this like noble.
I love the idea too that she's like kind of like, you know, she's like scrappy. She's like a seamstress, hence the thimble. And it's like the thimble's the first memory of his mom. Oh my god, the thimble's like the memory of his mom. She's like toiling like long hours in their like very like in their hovel. She cuts her finger. Like he pokes her finger and it's like blood. And he's, you know, it's like it's the memory of like mom working long hours to try and support him. He's like, I have to do something. This is like motivation to be like. Yeah.
And when he was rich, you have like a scene where like he comes in and like it's like his mom is like, you know, growing old. She's like in her 80s or something, and she's still like sewing like her own socks and stuff. And he's this wealthy man, and he's like, you know, he gets angry. He's like, why are you doing this? Like, we have people for this now. You know, it's like stop using. And like, you know, they get in this fight, and like her mom, like his mom died like the next day from a sickness and like with a thimble on her finger, and he just like hid it away because he never wanted to look at it.
Okay, we need to look at what the pieces are.
Well, yeah, there's more. It's kind of fascinating. It's very interesting. It's fascinating because then you have like, then the car was added in the 30s. And there's a purse, which was retired. Then a rocking horse, which was retired.
I remember the rocking
then horse. Then a lantern, which was retired.
They just retired the thimble, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is an outrage to me.
Oh, is it? I don't see it as being retired.
They just announced that they're getting rid of it.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're changing it with, we're actually replacing, they're trying to modernize it. It's going to replace with a silver selfie stick.
God damn it. And then there's,
this like, is new cane.
Scotty the dog wasn't until the 50s. The token has become the most beloved.
And that
of
was
all
that's
pieces.
When they added One Nation Under God to Monopoly.
Then there was the wheelbarrow, which is retired now, and then the horse and rider, similarly removed as the canon. No fanfare. Then there was just a sack of money. Oh, they added that 1999 to present. Then there's a sack
I don't
of
know
money.
About that. I feel like they're messing with the canon.
The Clinton years.
Oh, then a cat. They tried to add a cat to it. It's like, okay. It's got a diamond ring.
Hey, man, they've been trying to sell this same fucking game to everybody for the last fucking 400 years.
Oh, yeah. I see four. There's some rejected ones. There's a helicopter, a guitar, a diamond ring, and then like a toy square robot.
Although those are horrible.
Yeah, they're all horrible. That's why they were rejected. Okay.
The sack of money, by the way, looks just like like the metal shop just like spewed off a shaving and they just like dumped it in. And no wonder they got rid of it.
So it's definitely okay. So it's the story of Rich Uncle Money, Rich Uncle Pennybags.
Rich Uncle Pennybags,
R-U-P. Rupert. Rupert.
Wait, that's his name?
No, but right.
It's like, his initials, R-U-P.
Oh, there you go. That's how you backronym it, right?
It's like backronym.
Yeah. So
that's
it's R-U-P.
A great term.
So it's like Rupert Upton. P rich sounding P name.
So it's like we're potentially talking about a flashback structure.
Yeah.
And it kind of like, what is the thing? Is this like walk the line? Like he's about to go.
Yeah.
Know,
what's like, what's, oh, yeah, what's yeah, causing yeah. him to rethink his past?
Yeah.
What's the, or is
it would be like some major fifth act decision that he's making. That's like a, I don't know. He's going to, you know.
Can Ikaru work with a rich man?
Siri, can Ikiru work with a rich man? I don't know, man.
Oh, man. It's gotta be because, like, right, like, you know, just you know, so flashback structure is kind of just is an interesting one. Obviously, a lot of people say, like, oh yeah, you can't do flashbacks and blah. It's like screenplay advice everybody, you know, that everybody gives to sort of starting screenplay writers. And when you look at movies that do flashback structure right, the key is, like, the reason for it has to be, like, when you're getting back, that needs to be informing a little bit, I think, what's going on in that moment, right? So, like, Slumdog Millionaire, it's the flashbacks are kind of actively explaining why he's able to answer the questions. Mm-hmm. Is really, like, and that's the
reason. Well, and it works because the story is
ready. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Like, if it was just linear and Slumdog Millionaire and he just followed his life and then suddenly he was on a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show, it'd be like, what? Like, yeah. Just, yeah, like, what's going up there? Yeah, I'm trying to think if you can do.
What if, okay. All right. What if the flashback is he's playing Monopoly with his, like, niece or nephew or, like, great or grandniece?
And it's causing him to have flashbacks.
And all of the pieces themselves are making him flashback.
And he flashes back and remembers how he dominated the real estate market and he schools his kids, just totally destroys them in, like, four moves. Hell yeah. Well, it's like, right, is he on trial? Like, is this the end of his life? And he's, like, reminiscing.
What if it's, okay, so here's another Monopoly piece of iconography that I think everyone relates to is angrily flipping the board.
Yeah.
And, like, could you make, again, it's like this guy has played the game his whole life, but then you do the climax is him flipping the board. Is like him, like, I don't know what that means even, but it's on a metaphorical level that he's gonna literally just, like, he's in this, like, this revolutionary, destructive, like, he's gonna topple the whole system or something like that. Like, it's become this corrupt, cancerous machine and he's gonna destroy it. I don't know.
Is it maybe that he's like it's rags to riches, and then
rags to riches gets you to your midpoint.
Sure, but, like, is it back to rags again? Is it him, like, giving away all of his stuff? Is it him, you know, is it like he loses it, right? Like, is it the idea really kind of getting back to even the original roots of the thing? Is it that capitalism is an empty pursuit and that it didn't help him in the end and et cetera, et cetera? And, like,
I think Hasbro's calling us and Monopoly is.
Monopoly, it's not the story, like, Matt.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I want this. That's why I was giving that obstruction of, like, can you do? Because I think right now, like, our tendency, it's very easy. I think three of us would do. It's very easy for us to do.
You know what this
anti-capitalism.
Yeah, me and fuck the man.
Like, that would be our natural thing. It's like, I want to get in the mindset. It's like, how can we do a pro rich Uncle Pennybag story?
I see what you're saying. Well, then he's kind of. It's going to have to end with him being charitable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean it has to be a fascist story. Yeah. It's just make him a positive character.
You know what is actually really interesting that might be a modern thing to look at is Shark Tank.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think Shark Tank is maybe, like, the best capitalist propaganda I've ever seen in my life. Because what it does is it focuses on the romance of the entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
The way it portrays the sharks, you know, truthful or not, but again, like, all of the sharks are these self-made people. They started with, again, like, you know, what Robert came over from, like, Bulgaria or something like that with nothing.
Yeah.
And he, you know, talks about how, like, his father slaved away and he didn't want to squander that opportunity. And so, you know, he decided, wanted to make money. There is that romance of the American dream that comes with that. And then on the show, you're seeing, like, again, people who are putting all of themselves into something. And the best stories on Shark Tank are, like, again, like the single mom who, you know, works full time as a mom and then took out a huge loan
with an idea and a dream.
Because she believed in herself.
Yeah.
And so that's, I don't know, but that's very empowering.
Yeah. And they're often rewarded and you'll have, like, Mark Cuban will be like, you are the American dream. He'll say that to somebody.
It is the good side of capitalism because
but then also mix. And in the same way, they also punish those who seem, arrogant or flippant or not hardworking. They're dead to them. They don't get the idea. You're punished also for not being a good capitalist. Essentially. Yeah.
You got to be able to play the game and play the game well. And if you can master the game, you are rewarded.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that.
You're talking about depictions, right? Depictions of capitalism and ways of slicing that pie and getting into it. And what are the qualities that would make this not seem just sort of gross?
I just watched this. I just went with my wife to a play, a Eugene O'Neill play called, I'm going to forget the name of it. Long Day's Journey Into Night. And in Long Day's Journey Into Night, it's about this family, the sort of paterfamilias is this like successful actor. But he is, again, it's kind of what we're talking about. He started, was penniless growing up. And, his mother was terrified of, winding up in the poorhouse. And he becomes wealthy. I remember Robert McKee talking about this in Story when he was talking about Wall Street. And then in Gordon Gekko, you had a character who was wealthy, but suffering the pains of poverty. Despite all of his money, Gordon Gekko just wants more, right? And in the Eugene O'Neill play, this guy, he has tons of money, but he grew up being so, having to be so frugal and spendthrifty that he's now this miser, right? He's literally going around their big, shabby, poorly maintained mansion, like making sure they're not turning all the lights on. And again, the son is dying of consumption, but he's not going to spend the extra money to take him to a really nice hospital because he's like, you're going to die anyway. There's something wrong with him. Part of him is broken.
Right.
And that's always something that intrigues me in stories like this is, I think it's a little pat to just say money can't buy happiness.
Sure, yeah.
And it's always like, it feels like people...
feels like a lie to tell yourself, too.
When you don't have a lot of money.
Actually, it feels like a lie that people who have enough money to meet all of their basic needs tell people who... I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Money can't buy happiness, but money can absolutely lay down a foundation from which you can pursue happiness otherwise couldn't. Yeah, if you're just literally trying to survive. But I am always intrigued by psychologically that idea of, because again, you look at, and you see these guys like with Enron, right? Like these guys were already gajillionaires, but they just like wanted more and more money. And there is something interesting to me. And there's this sad irony to the idea that you are rich beyond your wildest dreams, that you are still afraid of. You're so afraid of losing it all that you can't enjoy it. Or that there is just this kind of, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that.
No, because I'm trying to think of like inside answers. So there's Uncle Pennybags, by the way, his full name, as revealed in 1988, is Milburn Pennybags.
Milburn Pennybags,
which is pretty great. The game introduced Mr. Monopoly's niece and nephew, Sandy and Andy. So I'm trying to think again, a little bit like Duck. So like when you think about Sandy Donald and Duck Andy. With his nephews, like I'm wondering if there's
I want to be clear. Those are Donald Duck's children. Right?
No, he has no. They're his nephews.
What?
Yeah, no. Donald Duck's nephews. What are you talking about?
You mean
nephews? Scrooge Donald McDuck's. Duck's no. Donald Duck's nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, are Donald Duck's nephews and the grand nephews.
No, they're Scrooge McDuck. Are they Donald Duck's nephews?
Yes, Duck's nephews and grand nephews of Scrooge McDuck.
Who are their parents?
Nobody knows. Oh, who is Huey and Dewey's father? Is Della Duck's husband and the father of her sons.
What was that? This is a total derail now, but what was that show where we were with, it was like somebody and it was like my uncle and we were like, wait, oh, Donkey Kong.
We're talking about Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
Donkey
Kong's weird
family tree is insane. Donkey Kong's family tree is bonkers. And then what I love is when you realize that Diddy Kong is Donkey Kong's niece's boyfriend.
That's right. That's what it was.
So when you think about that game, it's like it's a kid hanging out with his girlfriend's uncle. Like it's such a bizarre like.
And then they have the same last be the name.
Next story break, we're gonna do Donkey Kong.
We should do Donkey Kong.
And they
Kong
have the same
time.
Last name. Yeah, we were going through. It was like we were doing the short stuff because it was Ashley and Anthony, and we were just like, we spent like 4 hours
it
going
was
over
the
Donkey Kong's family story.
It was because it was like, first of all, everyone's last name is Kong.
Yeah.
So you'd think that they were all related, but then Diddy Kong and what's the girl?
I forget his girlfriend's name because
Dixie
Candy,
Kong?
Dixie. So that's like, so Donkey Kong and his niece make sense, but it's like
Diddy Kong and Dixie Kong are clearly boyfriend and girlfriend in the thing, right? So yeah, then it is like, it's like, and then in the game, it's like, no, she's his niece. And then, so it's like.
I love, because I love the idea of this guy, like if the story of this guy having to hang out with his niece's boyfriend, that it's just like, anyways.
All right, let's save this for next week's Donkey Kong episode.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think if you do something where it's like, he's like, why do his niece and nephew show up now? Like, I wouldn't do that. They have a good relationship yet. Is it, also states that Mr. Monopoly has a wife named Madge. No. He is named the sixth.
He has a wife?
Named Madge.
Where are you getting this? Where are you Wikipedia, getting this information?
Wikipedia for Uncle Pennybags. This was in the book Monopoly, the World's Most Famous Game and How It Got That Way. Also states that Mr. Monopoly has a wife named Madge. He is named as the sixth richest fictional character in the 2006 Forbes Fictional 15 list. And then ninth richest in 2011. I don't think he has a wife.
No, it's not. I think it's the story.
I think they're adding that in Madge. Maybe he's in love with somebody named Madge. Sandy and Andy. Good one, guys.
So, yeah, all right. I'm just trying to sketch out our universe here. So we got the notorious RUP. We have Sandy and Andy.
Sandy and Andy.
We got all the knick-knackery.
The items, the objects.
So I'm trying to think of. So
here's what I'll say. Here's the other thing I'll say. Hasbro wants a fun movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They want, and again, so there is something to the idea of like that Sandy and Andy come to live with Rich Uncle Pennybags, yes. Right? Yes. And it's like, oh, cool, you get to live in this mansion and you have, you know, waiters and you're like, yeah. You know, it's like a, and you know, he's kind of like this, it's almost like a series of unfortunate events, but like not.
Yeah, well, he can be grumpy. Like he can start. It would be fun to essentially see, like, you know, Futurama, Mom?
Yeah, evil mom? Yeah, Mom's Robot
yeah,
Company.
What I like is what you could do is, like, I like this persona that Rich Uncle Pennybags has. Mm-hmm. And I think he owns a company where, like, he is, like, Mom in Futurama, he is the brand. Mm-hmm. So, like, because you can start the movie with, like, he's in a commercial and it's Rich Uncle Pennybags, whatever. And you see him, he's the Monopoly man. And then when you cut away, he's this sad, grumpy, crotchety, Scrooge-type character. And you have his two fun-loving niece and nephew show up, and it's going to be about him rediscovering like how he was in the first place, right?
Maybe.
Big fat no from Will.
I don't know about him being a grump,
but that's fun. Like, if he's not, or if it's, or then you're gonna do like. Because the other version,
I was actually going to go the opposite end with it, where you do that he is outwardly goofy and eccentric and zany, but inside harbors this deep sadness or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say was you could do, yeah, maybe him being a grump is the wrong affectation.
I just feel like I've seen that before. Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's Andy or
and
Andy
plus, it's just again, when you look at him, like every picture, he's like doing like this. Like he's yeah, like, I don't know. Yeah. He feels like, it feels like the uncle who would like slide down the giant banister. Do you know what I mean? And like buy a bunch. Although maybe that's who he becomes at the end.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like then what's his. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what.
It should just be that he's super wacky, and then they're like, "Oh, this is great," and they're like, "He has dementia. He's losing his mind."
Well, again, it could be. I mean, the other version is like if he's that. I mean, you can do something where he's not like the changing character. I mean, he would be like a rich version of Mary Poppins to these kids. But then it's like, what's the story of the kids, or what's the story of
I think it's gotta be about him.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say this is gonna seem not fun, but I was thinking about that story of there's this guy who he was just like this horrible father, and his I forget most of it, but essentially it comes down to he but the whole point was like his family, he had like seven children and his family was all gone, and then he died and they came to his house and his house was booby-trapped to kill all of them because he hated his children. Mm-hmm. and his wife left him, and he just like was this bitter old resentful man. And I don't think this is Rich Uncle Pennybags. What I was getting to is that you do that, it could be he was, and then when he lost his wife, and then he like his kids kind of moved away from him and whatnot, and you could do like his son or his daughter, whoever it is, died, and that's why the uncle and the niece and nephew are coming to him.
I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines.
Yeah.
this is a bit of a zag. This is a bit of a curveball.
Okay.
You do, it's like you do it like a rat race type movie.
Uh-huh.
But you do, Rich Uncle Pennybags is about to cast off his mortal coil.
Uh-huh.
He is, you know, or he's looking at the end of his career. And he's trying to figure out who shall run his business Which of his seven children shall take over the family business? Or, you know, which of these seven random people from across America, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and one of them is the thimble. One of them is the iron. One of them is the this. One of them is the that, right? And you do, basically, he forces them to play, not forces them, but it's like they're all playing real life Monopoly against each other with actual businesses and banks and stuff like that. And then it's like, you have like, again, like your sort of Charlie Bucket character is going to be like the good
capitalistic
person.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. Like almost like the Apprentice or something like that. Like it's, do you know what I mean? And then that way you can have him be the roguish, fun, like kind of Jack Sparrow character.
Well, yeah, the fun of it would be that, of course, then it would be a rat race and it's a competition between these six people. And of course you have like the Wall Street already 100 millionaire who wants to be the, you know, Bill Gates. You have the Harvard, you know,
economics professor
snob who thinks he can solve the world's problems if he had this money. You have the crime lord who's freaking ready to make it. But then you'd have like the 14-year-old
Sandy and Andy, the 14-year-old kids who, you know, made a good buck with their lemonade stand.
Yeah, exactly. And
it's Uber for lemonade stands. Yeah, because they have like this app and it shows you, it's like Airbnb.
So we're modern
meets,
times now.
Huh?
So we're modern.
Yeah, I would do it modern times. Yeah. I feel like it would be, because then Rich Uncle Moneybags is your tie to the past, right? Because he's eccentric monocled guy driving his
So
hold on real quick, just there's something like emotional. To me, I don't know how you get there, but there's something about the objects and it's the idea of being, I don't know, maybe like he's like, you just task them with like present me like the one object that is the most important to like wealth or whatever. And it's like whoever wins, like brings him like the thimble or something. And it's like this crazy, like, my God, like it's the Ratatouille, like flashback back to.
I wouldn't
do that.
I wouldn't make him call them, because then it's just arbitrary, because it feels like he's like, oh, I'm a character from that board game, so you guys are the thimble. I would do
it's not that he calls them. No, it's just that
similar to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I would do like the kids lose or whatever it is, and like for thank you for this wonderful experience they have, it's like they bring him something. Like it would be like he, because like to me it's all about Moneybags opens up his box still and sees the pass, and he of course he's like Sandy and Andy win, and then you have the big grumpy Harvard school business guy. He's like, they didn't win, I won the game, what are you talking about? And he's like, no, these kids know, these kids understand, like, it's all about the thimble, you know? He has the box, and the kids, it would be the kids touch the part of him. It's like, why is he doing this? Why is he giving away all of his money?
You
realize, like, oh, he was a lonely person for the past, like, 50 years, and they, you know, they reawaken, you know, the love he has or whatever it is.
It's like, what?
And I like that, the eccentricity, it's the sadness within, the eccentricity is how he's just dealt with the fact that he is this
lonely. He gave his entire life to this business, and he has nothing, right?
Yeah.
When whatever it is that the kids, like, their whatever scheme the kids come up with, it has to be like, oh, it maybe wasn't successful monetarily. It's like, but it did the one thing he could never do throughout the course. It's like they build a community of friends or something together.
Well, you would do that. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is really fun. This is fun. Okay. Yeah. Because then, it's got everything I like. Because again, you also do, you of course have the table flipping scene is the petulant bad guy when he loses it. He's like, because they have the model of this, because that's what do.
That's the model of Atlantic City.
He has the model of Atlantic City. He's like, I'm entrusting to each one of you like $500,000 to grow your business, and whoever shall blah, 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 shall win my empire by the end of it. Then you do at the end, like they're all back there, and he reveals who the winner is, and the bad guy goes, no! And he flips the whole board over. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, the bad guy has to be
I won! I won!
But I won!
Yeah, so it's just like elaborate, You know, I could still see it as like,
oh my God,
no, I guess it's gonna monetize. There's nothing about it. It's like I could see it as in like post World War, like just post World War II or something.
I like modern because it gives you, like, again, I love the kids having a lemonade stand app. Like it's just that we're in this silly, I guess it's a satirical version of the modern world.
I'm just trying to think of like the rather than it being like a big, because rather than it being like I just imagine like spinning papers telling you about,
you still
like,
do all that stuff.
Yeah, I guess.
Like spinning Snapchats.
like spinning HuffPo.
Oh my God.
Has
anyone done that? Oh,
I don't know,
God.
But that's the whole thing, is you would do it with this like old-timey 1930s Frank Capra aesthetic, but you put it in a modern time and you get like fun and anachronistic touches that way.
Has anyone ever done like the spinning? Wait, really?
Why not? I don't know. You got to do it modern because it's all about what does it mean to be a capitalist, or like what does it mean to be a good businessman in the modern world?
But how? So then, my point.
I just think it's really boring if you put it all back in the day. Like, it's especially if you're going to do this bigger, broader, eccentric. Like, have it represent what America is like more or less.
Well, I think you have to do
because you can have the Silicon Valley douchebag. You can have the Wall Street douchebag. Like you're going to have more fun. You're going to have more fun with it, and you can be more. You can have more fun with the satire if it's modern. It just feels a little.
Also, I'll put it this way, in the weird Shark Tanky way. Like, I almost buy there's a world where it's like, yeah, these kids came up with a thing, and this is how, you know, like that they can compete, as opposed to, like, you know, I look at the various eras of history. It's like definitely not 20s. You know, their kids were dying of black lung back then. You know, post World War II. It's like,
Post World War II was. The 19, I get the problems.
Too, it's like everybody's talking about like what'd you do in the war? Like everybody coming back.
What are you talking about? That's like saying right now everybody's talking about what I mean. Everybody's talking about what are you doing now that Trump's president? It's like it's part of the time period. The thing that bothers the thing I'm not sure.
All right,
about,
well, all right, so
the
what,
thing
what,
I'm not worried. The thing I'm worried about, and the thing that doesn't quite jive to me, is like. Yes, it has to be satirical, but then I'm like, okay, you have to lean into that, and you really have to make it about modern business if you're going to do it today. And I don't think you can get away with kind of the abstraction of this. Like, I'm trying to think, like, how do you even present, like, the media would be all over this. The show would be, like, a big, like, it'd be hard to...
Sure.
It'd be like if you did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory now, it would be a different... You couldn't do the kid in
I mean,
a
they,
bedroom
Tim
with
Burton
four.
Modernized Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. When
It's not modernized. It's a nondescript, like, old-timey, like, setting.
Really?
Yeah, it's still... I don't know.
I guess I haven't seen the movie. Doesn't he like kill a kid for texting in his chocolate factory?
They do like a little joke, but because they don't make it like,
murdered for texting. I've never seen this movie, but somehow that image is.
Okay, let's assume
head.
It's modern time. So, well, there might be problems that
I think I'm trying to think of like how to tap into it the right way. What time is Lemony Snicket in a specific time period?
That's a
no,
weird
all
one.
Those, all those. I think all because again, for it's kind of the same reason I'm getting at. It's like they are all
kind
in.
Of weird
they're all
Americana.
In their alt. They're in a reality where they can decide the things because you don't.
That's
have
That's
to.
What I'm talking about. I guess when I say modern times, I don't mean
honestly,
that we're doing like a gritty,
honestly,
like
yeah.
Plus, I mean like a magical realist, like
I could buy that.
We're in the board game version of 2016. We're in a board game reality. Do you know what I mean?
Let me think. It's not a bad reference point because the thing that they do really well is that they're able to like pull pieces from like modern stuff when it's necessary and convenient,
mm-hmm.
but they don't live in it and they don't like, right. It's like, it's not like their parents die and it's like, it's all over social media. It's like, no, it's on newspapers and the guys, you know, it's like, they're not Googling to see who Count Olaf is. Like, so that's like, they leave pieces of it out. So I feel like that's sort of like,
out.
Yeah. So I feel like that's, but at the same time they have references like music and stuff like that. Where you're like, oh, okay, this is a mishmash. I think that's not a bad reference point, by the way, in terms of like,
it's a
how
Burton-esque heightened reality. Yeah. Again, like Edward Scissorhands was like not set in the 50s, but it had a more or less its own magical.
That's fine. I'm getting to that. I don't think it's modern.
No, I agree.
There's modern elements too, for sure. Like you want it to be relevant, but yeah, it's like, I'm just thinking ahead to like just various things. And it's the same problems, like just self phones present problems for writing, and it's like that times a million.
I don't understand how cell phones present a problem in this story. Like, again, like I don't mind that there would be a but again, even if you were going to do it set in the 1930s, you would do that. This is a big to do and the media is all over it.
But like BuzzFeed has an actual reporter with a like a ticker in his hat, like trying to
Bob
get
Jones BuzzFeed news.
Me exactly, like that's sort of thing.
That's the tone.
I mean by that.
Okay. Yeah. Where it's like our world, but the 1940s adaptation of it.
The 20s adaptation of our world in a weird way. Yeah.
Okay. So
people
this
dress
is,
hella sharp.
So you have this rat race, essentially.
Yeah. And I think your main characters are. So you got Rich Uncle Pete. You know, and again, you probably have wacky side characters, right?
Is the golden ticket?
The golden ticket, or did like the invitation? You mean?
Yeah. Like, how did he? So he is. Is he dying? Like, is that what he's told people? Or is he just like, I'm just giving... So it's Charlie and Chocolate Factory, essentially, but capitalistic Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, Did he tell people he's dying? Or he's just like, hey, I'm giving up my fortune.
It's who's going to run his company.
Who's going to run...
He's like, I'm getting old. He's
Penny Bags Industries.
Yeah. You'd save that for a reveal, but it's I'm getting old and it's like this, I want my legacy to continue, but you know, who will, but obviously, right. Like he can be cognizant of like, you know, a lot of times this is a big problem in a lot of companies. Companies don't last because of this specific thing, which is like the moment of succession. And because a lot of times one, it's like either, you know, they go straight to their kids, which is generally has a pretty bad success rate. Cause it's like, just cause your kid doesn't mean you know anything about it. And then some other companies have taken this other routes of like, well, we're going to get outsiders, but outsiders sometimes ruin it. So it's like, I'm going to come up with this test, right? Like to prove to me that you have what it takes, all the sort of qualities inherent to be able to,
well, he's doing because you could even have a scene where it's like you had started, and it's just like the board of directors and they all have their heads down and they just can't believe what he just said, which is I'm giving the company over to, you know, somebody else. You totally need one of the people in the rat race needs to be like a branding expert takes on his personality. Like he's like, no guys, you don't care. It's not about the money. It's about rich uncle Pennybags. Like he's vibrant. He's happy. Like this is what he wants. And he's just that guy. And he's like, but he doesn't have the sadness deep within him. He's just all artificial. He just gets funny bags just on a surface level.
I feel like, yeah, you do. Okay, so yeah, it's Uncle Pennybags. And because I was also thinking, like, do you do some? Okay, so it's, yeah, he's getting old. And he's, again, whether you imply it or you outright state it, he knows he's not long for this world.
Yeah.
And he's looking back on his life. And he's like this. He's looking at it, he doesn't see anyone in his company that could lead it.
Yeah.
I was even thinking you could do something where like he has a son or he has a daughter that he doesn't think is good enough.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And they are supposed to inherit the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm going to, you know, like I need someone with that drive and that ambition or whatever. Cause I was also thinking that would be an interesting character, whether you make them the villain of the piece or you have them, they do the thing where like, I'm going to disguise myself and, you know, go bottom to prove to my father that I have what it takes. Cause he's always only seen me as his little boy or his little girl. And then that is his sort of emotional problem he's getting over as well. At any rate, so yeah, you would do that. It's like he is going to like he is looking to see like he's like I need someone with vision, like I need someone with, you know, like with, you know, like all of these qualities to take over my company. And so he picks these people from throughout the business world, you know, like again, like you have again like the wealthy, the stock jock, and like the again the
Harvard business school grad. He's like hand selected them with a letter, you know, monogrammed and wax sealed.
Mm-hmm.
A group of, you know, what, 8-10 stalwart people that he has identified as potential so and so's, and of course everybody's leaping at the opportunity to get at, you know, this thing, and then the rules are set and they're off, right, pretty much, right? And it's just cutthroat and
it's killer BK. And again, I think you would do that. It's like, I'm trying to think of what the rules of the competition are. Like he gives each one of them a stack of seed money. He gives them control over each of them control over one of his holdings or something like that.
Yeah,
so
one person's like a utilities company. One person gets the boardwalk. Like the rich asshole gets like the boardwalk.
Yeah, so there's immediately a jockeying for who's going to get one. And of course the kids get stuck with the railroads or like some shitty, like, you know.
The railroads are key. What is it? What is the purple ones?
They get stuck with some junk property or something like that.
Yeah,
Because I was also thinking you could do like, again, like, and then it's also like all of these alliances form within the players themselves, right?
Oh, where
it's
100%.
They create their own little hedge group or something like that. Because then I was like, you should have one of the characters should be like this doofus from like Oxford, who's or like London School of Economics, who's like the bespectacled, like elbow patched Ivy League professor or whatever.
And real quick, the kids get the parking lot and it's a free parking lot.
Like, they get the free parking. Yeah,
it's like it's parking. It's always been free. It's like, well, we can't charge people. How are we gonna make money from this? Yeah. They have to use their into. Right. There's an old.
Oh no, you do. Okay. They get the free parking lot, right? And they're like, shit, we're screwed. We're never gonna make it. It's a free parking lot. And then you do like, there's like an old hobo living in the parking lot and like sleeping out of a car or whatever, but he used to be this whiz kid genius or whatever. Like you would do like they're old mentor. It's like the hermit, right? But again, like you would, I guess, I don't know. I like them having some sort of mentor, but yeah, it's like some again, washed up economics professor or something like that, who like understands all of this capital theory or like, you know, I don't know.
So,
it's really fun.
They don't try and figure out. Cause looking like, what is, so like looking at Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like one, yeah. and obviously this isn't exactly that, but the things that work in that, or why that story works, is one, they don't know they're working to be a successor. Mm-hmm. Like, that's Willy Wonka has set up a moral test, right? You get a free trip to see this thing that nobody else has ever seen before. He's going to essentially invite you into his home, his vulnerable place of what he considers to be perfection, of all the things he loves. And one by one, the kids fail various moral tests of greed and not but whatever, like whatnot. And
deadly sins.
Exactly. And by the end, it's like Charlie is a good kid who thanks Willy Wonka for this tour, and he's clearly is the sort of person Willy Wonka likes. He's like, surprised you're going to run this company. Mm-hmm. So what is, because if it's like make the most money, then it's like, okay, then, you know, he's essentially presenting the idea that making the most money is the most important thing to me. That's what is he missing from the people in the company? What's the moral test he's presenting these people, and how are Sandy and Andy going to win? Because to me, the key is like, what is it? What is rich Uncle Pennybags looking for?
I think part of it is that he has to.
Because like, if he was like, I don't see stuff in any of these people here, I'm going to do a game for who can make the most money off this random game.
I think he has to be. I think he has to be vague. I think he has to say like, I'm going to like see who has like whatever, like who has what it takes. And the point being is, I feel like a part of it is how everyone interprets what he means by that. So it's like,
yeah, but you want there to be some sort of clear goal, because you want them to feel like they've lost. And if it's just like this sort of nebulous interpretation of what a good capitalist means, I see what you're saying. I think there is probably inherently a level of deception that he tells them.
Absolutely. And to me, that's why the guy flips the board. He'd be like, they won, the ultimate test was this. Then what's the, like, to me, that's the key. It's like, if you can be like, the ending is rich Uncle Pennybags looks at this, you know, Silicon billionaire and Sandy and Andy, and the guy's like, woo, I won. And rich Uncle Pennybags is like, nope, the actual test was blank. They get it. And the guy's like, no, and he flips the board. I'm like, oh, great movie. What is that? I think that's the key to this, is like, what is it that he wants from his successor?
I think it would, okay, this is the cheesy version.
Yeah.
I think it would be something along the lines of like, what is the again, it gets down to, what is the purpose of capitalism? Yeah. What is the point of money? What is the point of business? Right. Yeah. And this guy just thinks it's about profit, right? Like, this guy that, you know, he's like, I made the most profit. I've, you know, like, I've fucking exploded, you know, like my division of the company rules everything. Like, look at all this cash we're making. But then you would do the kids, like the stuff that they did, like enriched the community, like it made the world a better place. Mm-hmm. Because again, like you could argue that, again, it's like cars and electricity and railroads. Like, it's not just about making money. It's about letting, it's about connecting people. It's about making, it's about enriching lives. It's about like all of this. Yeah. So like, I'm trying to think if there's some sort of, if I don't know if it's exactly that, but it's like,
I mean, I'll just tell you that, like, a lame image I have, which just does not quite work, but I'm just thinking literally only because I'm trying to think of those like pieces. It's like, you know, it's Indiana Jones with the goblets, the Holy Grail, and it's like the kid and them, and he's like, pick the thing that's most important to business or whatever. I don't know what he would pick, but it'd be like the kids pick the thimble,
right?
And the guy's like, a thimble, you fucking idiot.
The American Express Black Card. Exactly.
And it's like, and yeah, I'd be like, I was just trying to think of something symbolic for the bull, that it's, you know, it's only your own work matters, and Pratepa is like, I don't get it. I'm just trying to, what is that final, because I see they're enriching them, but like, I even feel like that would be, which again, I get, maybe that's where I'm like, it definitely has to be a pseudo fantasy world, because again, my thought would be like, a Silicon Valley billionaire, believe me, he probably has like 40 charities himself. Like, that wouldn't be like a surprise to him. Mm-hmm. That's like, if they even on Shark Tank now, they talk about every person who comes into Shark Tank
is social.
Like,
yeah,
it's like, I make shirts that saves elephants, I make shirts that save the whales, and they're like, everybody saves something now. That's literally part of all businesses nowadays. What's this moral center? What is this like?
That's like that's beyond my pay grade, because I know nothing about economic philosophy, because I would want to get at the heart of like what capitalism in its, you know, in its most ideal form, or it's like, you know, like what like a genuine, again, because it's like, you know, it's like, it's not everyone, that's not every wealthy person is evil or anything that, but it's like your Warren Buffett's or your Bill Gates's is like, what would they say is the purpose of, you know, what does it take? Or again, what does it take to, you know, what is the, What is that final test of what it takes to be a true businessman?
Yeah.
A true business.
Well, to me, it would be like, and to make it personal, I think to make it not just like a, not just like a statement, but to make it a story, it'd be like, I think Sandy and Andy would, they would understand why he does what he does. Like, mm-hmm. like I think he's looking for somebody who has the same moral center or the same drive right. as well, he does, ultimately. So
what about this? What if the challenge he poses is he's like, I'm going to give you guys some seed capital and one of my properties, and your goal is like, and who will win in the end is who gives me the highest return on investment. Who gives me the highest ROI? And everybody immediately is like, well, that just means money. So like the people go down the route of like, you know, trying to generate as much cash as possible. And then the route that the kids take, it's like, you know, it's enriching the community. It's like, this is the greatest return on investment. Invest, you know, like the great, you know, enriching the community.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about that movie place, which is a bunch of people just running businesses.
Well, you want them to be like stabbing. Yeah, you want them to be going after each other.
Yeah, fucking with each other. And yeah, that
buying each other out, like hostile takeovers and stuff like that.
All right. It's like immediately two guys, like, if we combine our properties, like, we'll be able to like triple because of like your potential. And then this, you know, like those, that type of scheming is sort of very.
Is he making, I'm just trying to think of like, again, it's just like, yeah, I'm just trying to like something more. And this is why I'm thinking of like the fantasy world. It's like, is it that he, Rich Uncle Pennybags, has bought a big piece of property? It's going to be the new Atlantic City. And rather than just develop himself, is he gives the city to six people who are going to develop this. I was trying to think, like, what's the, I'm like, is this like, once you put them as like, here, here's like my businesses, or here's just properties sitting across the United States of America, or all, you know, I'm trying to think, like, what is this?
It's gotta be in like a, to me, it's, it like, it's gotta be a single spot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, all, exactly. It would be a, his Atlantic City properties.
Yeah.
Or his Atlantic City assets, like his bid, yeah. His, you know what I mean?
Or like a whole city.
Yeah. It's just, it's, right.
It's not literally a whole, he doesn't own a whole city, man.
I mean, I think like Walt Disney style, like, you know, like Epcot sort of like,
yeah, his, I'm trying to think,
vision is like Atlantic City, quote unquote, is like, he has like a giant property of like all this utility.
I know. I like the stakes of it being real. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't, rather than it just being like, you know, like some sort of like, his some future thing that he's doing, like this is like his real businesses that these people are running. Because again, so what I was going to say is like, you, to me, it's like, especially if we're going to follow these kids, right?
Yeah,
like you do act one, we see who they are, they get the invitation to you know, be part of this thing, you know. Act two, you see them, you know, again, it's like act two is everyone's picking their businesses and making their alliances, and they get stuck with free parking, and it's like, oh crap, what are we going to do. You do their rise to wealth, like, despite, you know, again, their underdog thing, like against all odds, they're able to spin some cool thing and make free parking work and blah, 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 blah. And hey, holy shit, they're one of the contenders, right? Mm. And it's like, wow. But then the true test begins, because now it's like, okay, free parking has acquired, like, again, if they acquire another division of the company, right? Or something like that, you would have to do, they have to, like, there's layoffs. Or like, right, they're going to have to cut costs, or they're going to have to like evict somebody who doesn't, can't afford their rent. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like so you would have them face the hard side of business and struggle with it.
Right.
And meanwhile, this like the more cutthroat guy is taking them for all they're worth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you would do some, I don't know exactly how it works.
Well, there's something interesting that, really quick, about the idea of like, they have to evict someone from the, hold on real quick. I'm just going to quickly reference from, Electric Avenue. Oh no, from Kentucky Avenue, right? That's like the property right by. But to me, there's something interesting about them being like, you know, like not there's something interesting about like, oh yeah, all the business guys are like, oh yeah, of course, like just to kick him out or whatever. And it's like the kids taking the more humanistic approach and like, wait, we can make this work. And here's a way of like, you know, kind of like judoing it around. They're like, psh, idiots, like you can't always, you know, sort of have a compromise. It's like, no, but you have to try, you know, or what have you. But the idea of like, them not, you know, quote unquote, on the surface, failing that test, but that's kind of what leads.
Or you do, okay, I'll throw this out there. You do, the kids are like, shit, like this side of the company is going down and all these people are going to lose their homes. So then they fucking cook the books to just like, to cover for them. They're like, no, we'll just add a zero there. It'll be fine. Cause they're kids, right? They're like, oh, we don't want these people to lose their homes. We'll just cheat a little bit. And then you do, cause again, like the low point should be it's Monopoly. They go to jail, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Then they get fucking thrown in grown up jail for it. It's just like also just the image of these two 12-year-olds at like the center of this insane Enron-esque like insider trading fucking book cooking corruption scandal, and then they get sent to minimum security prison, and they're like, holy shit, like what's going on? Like, I like the heightened reality.
No,
of that.
That's fair.
And I like that
people,
it's also
and the people coming by being like, just visiting.
Oh, God damn it. But it's like you do. Oh yeah, you would have earlier, like you plant the jail because he takes them on a tour of the jail visiting it. But
yeah,
you would do that. It's like they because it gives you both, right? Where it's like their failure is like that is like again they see this moral problem, but then like they try to cheat to like you know so that they don't have to deal with the uncomfortable side of it or something like that. I don't know.
Who are? I mean, because I've do not grasp this at all right now. Because it's if they're 12-year-olds and they're going to prison again, that's why I think it's like it's a fake thing. It's like it's a town, but you can't like I'm like you don't want the audience to be like so these kids just got lucky because they got this like moral because again like I don't know I'm just trying to figure out
maybe it's a line you don't cross, but the point being is that they don't.
I still quite good. So I'm trying to then hook onto something. So it's like who are Sandy and Andy? Who are these characters and what's their story?
Mm-hmm.
Because right now what I'm getting right now the only thing I'm kind of sensing is like it's Wolf of Wall Street, but not. It's a bunch of people renting random parts of this guy's business, and they get a free parking lot and something. They do stuff, but the other people who are running their businesses are somehow conflicting and backstabbing each other, but they're all running the same business but different parts. Like I just don't get. Not be like yeah, I literally just don't get. I don't give it's fancy. I don't give it's. I don't give it's like Edward Scissorhands. I don't give it's Wolf of Wall Street. I don't give it's the rules of a game. I don't give it's real life. It's just like just. I'll be honest, it's like a mashup of random business shit right now. So I'm trying to figure out who are Andy and Sandy, ignoring this monopoly.
Let's see if we can get you on Freddie and I's wave because I feel like Freddie and I are like.
Well, what's the story then?
The story at its root.
Sandy and Andy.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to put it together as I'm speaking. It's an American dream story, right? And it is these kids learning what it means and what it takes to run a business and to be leaders, essentially. And you might do some dynamic between the two of them as well, right? Like she's the overachieving older sister and he's the, you know, the goofball or something like that. But you would do. It's essentially that kind of. So yeah, I'm trying to piece it together. But it's like okay, so if I'm looking at it from their perspective, right? It's like again, it's this. If you're taking it as this kid's fantasy, right? You run a lemonade stand, or you do like you have some, you know, like a little thing that you're doing that makes some money for your school. You make an app, and it's like, hey, 12-year-old self-starter, good for you, right?
Yeah.
And then this crazy it's kind of like a video game high school type thing, like this this crazy opportunity falls in your lap, right? And again, if our main characters, let's say we pick one of them, let's say we pick the girl, right? And she has her dream is to be like, you know, one of the, you know, like top CEOs, like she wants the brass ring, so to speak, right? Like she's like a little Miss Lady Businessman, like is like her, like again, like it's like she got like her for Halloween, she dresses up as Sheryl Sandberg.
She was a kid in school who sold candy outside the school commissary at a slightly discount because she had the way because she saw, oh, there's a way.
Yeah, yeah. She's like a sort of she has the passion for this, essentially. And you would do she gets a chance to, you know, again, you're a kid, you come into this world, you go through its trials and tribulations, and you come to understand it at a deeper level, and then she is, you know, ultimately rewarded, or she is ultimately like, you know, becomes this, you know, CEO or whatever. Like I'm in terms of like trying to dial it into something. It's like a sort of comical, satirical, heightened reality take on the American dream
parable
type thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to figure out. So I'm trying to figure out the story of that. Like, because it's. Yes, I get the idea of like a kid being like, I want to be an entrepreneur.
All right.
And then they're thrown into a thing. And I think the a thing is a thing that I'm trying to, because I don't get what the thing is. Like even
okay.
Like,
All right. Well, let's dial in on the thing then. So in Monopoly.
And what is holding Sandy back?
So to me, the most interesting question, the most interesting thing this movie could be about is like, can you be a CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company and be a good person?
Okay.
Like to me, like the if you're going to talk about two values that are perpendicular to each other, mm-hmm. capitalism and like, you know, Judeo-Christian morality
like there's think pieces where they're like, are all tech CEOs actually sociopaths because that allows them to fire people without even caring about feelings and stuff so they can run people as machines mm-hmm. into perfect capitalist money-making ventures, that sort of thing, right?
It is those two things. And again, so much of American, the American dream and sort of Western civilization, or just civilization in general, is this push and pull between self-interest and interest of the group, right? Like, yeah. And like, again, that there are places where they intersect and there are places where they pull each other apart. Like, there are, again, like, it's, you know, it is easier for a camel to walk through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to pass through the gates of heaven, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the,
right, it's been part of a thing that people struggled with.
I would love it, by the way, if, like, to enter Mr. Pennybags' office or whatever, there's like this giant needle with an eye that you have to walk through as his way of reminding you. Again, it's this subtle symbolism that no one understands except for, you know, like, again, but it's like
it's a seamstress roots, man.
Yeah, again, like this, it's the thimble, but it's also the needle. That's actually really interesting to me. And so to me, I like the idea of Monopoly being a story about reconciling those two things. Again, when I think about playing Monopoly, I think about, again, like, there's just this certain point at which Monopoly stops being fun. And it's when you're winning like crazy and the person you're playing with is miserable, right? Like, the game inevitably gets to this point where you're just beating somebody else down, and you're just watching them move their piece from one property to the next, and they don't have the money to pay you back, and you're just turning the screws on them, right? Right.
That's when I have the most fun.
But that's the question. That's the question, right? It's like, is there a way of playing this game and not having everybody feel bad at them except for one person? Or is it, right, like, kind of the purpose of the game in the first place? And is it, and
it's, but it's, again, and it's like this, so, yeah, it's, I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. I don't have those are deep, deep questions, and I don't have the answers.
Well,
that's
what I'm trying to get to, like, a character. So, like, for example, like, I like the Eye of the Needle thing, so I was thinking, that's what I'm trying to get to, like, because what I don't get is at the end right now, it's like the kids, because it'd be easy to be like, why? And it's not, I don't think you have to have an economics degree. Well, I was like, what's the moral thing that you want? This seems like a morality tale, it's a fairy tale, essentially.
Right.
It's going to be Rich Uncle Pennybags is going to say, these kids did this. And like, that's what I'm trying to hit to, like, who is he? Why is he giving this up? What is he missing from the people around him? And like, just being a good person is like one thing, but it's like, what are we saying is a good person? For example, like, if you're going to do, again, this still is the same thing as the Holy Grail, it doesn't work, but if the end thing was like, give Rich Uncle Pennybags like a gift, or like a final thing, or like your final thought, and everybody has like, here is like, I saved this town, or here's this, because I also think like the bad guys need to be like, if the bad guys are just like hysterical cartoons of business people, it's like, cool. It's like, these kids are just fun kids that are nice, and everybody else are good business guys that are mean. It's like too easy of a, of a thing.
Mean.
It'd be like the girls, like the Sandy Annie, to give him a thimble. It's like, this is the thimble my mom did when she sewed socks to make just enough money to get us through school. Mm. It's like, this is all we can offer. Like, this is what we want to offer you. And he's like, this is the best gift of them all, or whatever. It is. Like, they remember, they know why they are here. They know why they do this, or whatever it is. It's for family. It's for the people we care about, or something. Like, right. Everybody else is like, oh shit, we shouldn't have
given you this giant battleship or car or this dog
or this cute puppy. He's like, oh wait, you gave me a puppy, never mind, you guys win. You gave me a puppy.
He just like this thimble is the gift, and then he just breaks the puppy's neck. You are going to have to, I guess, here's what I could almost bear with me. Yeah. This is weird, and this is gonna sound weirdly depressing, and Hasbro would hate this, so I'm not saying that this is the thing. The climax scene for the girl could be like having to lay off a factory. Dude, it is getting up and giving the speech to a bunch of factory workers that they're going to have to lose their jobs or something like that. Like, because of just the way things are. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's not, you wouldn't do that. She's not, because it's like, again, you have to fire people. You have to make tough decisions. And like, being a good leader is about being able to make those tough decisions and being able to not disconnect yourself from the pain of it, but having the guts to do it as well. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's like a, hey, like, I'm going to lose, you know, 2% from my golden parachute unless I can 400 people or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like the,
which makes me wonder if, I'm trying to figure out, because once you put into this rat race thing, it's specifically about them versus other, right? It's like, it's almost like you could do that if it was like, Sandy and I need to go live with their Rich Uncle Pennybags, and they're going to take it over, and they have to learn it. And that's the thing. So I'm trying to figure out, because like, once you put in like them versus like five people, it's like, are those five people not, like, is the economics guy not going to lay off a factory? Or if he does, like, what's the difference between them and everybody else?
I see what you mean.
I mean, because that's like that once you set up in that concept.
Yeah, once it's like, hey, I have to lay off all these people so I can win this fucking competition. Like, it's a little, yeah, it doesn't quite make sense.
That's why
I
think that's why I'm holding. I think, because I get the, because the rat race thing is often like, I mean, like.
It was a very simple A to B goal, usually.
Well, yeah, and you're playing a morality tale against all these different personalities, essentially. Yeah, so right. I'm trying to figure out.
And I like that. I like that structure. So yeah. I don't want to, I'm not saying it's she lays everybody off or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I'm sorry,
like,
I'm not being a yes ander. I'm only presenting problems. I'm trying. I think for worries. I'm like my brain's not on. I'm trying to get on the because I think it's because I don't have what I'm working towards yet. Like I'm trying to figure out what is that ending.
What's that ending?
If I got that, I'd be like, okay, great. Now I get like what the games are. I get like who are they competing against. Like I don't get what the movie's about yet. Like I get it in generally. It's like these two kids are going to learn what it means to be a good business person or a capitalist or. But it's like even because that's different than even what we're thinking about originally, which is like giving rich Uncle Pennybags, like he's this happy guy who's really deep down sad. Like it'd be like, okay, they're going to make him rediscover the meaning of his life before he dies, or they're going to make him remember why he did this in the first place. Like we don't even have that right now. It's like Sandy and Andy are going to learn what it means to be good before, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to figure out like, because even Willy Wonka has a little bit of that, because Willy Wonka is, it would be one thing if it was just Charlie, but it's Charlie and his uncle. So like, even though like Charlie just ends up being like a good person throughout it, at the end, it's like Willy Wonka has isolated himself and he has no family and he's nobody. And at the end, not only does he give it to Charlie, it's because of the love of him and his uncle. And he's like, I missed that. I didn't have a family. And like, it's smart for me. That's actually why why I like Tim Burton's version of the movie more than the one everybody likes, because it has its problems, but at least what it got from that and what he understood from the story is Willy Wonka doesn't have a father anymore. Mm-hmm. And of course Burton makes it about fathers because everything with Burton's fathers, but like he got that part of the story.
What if you do I'm intrigued by this girl and her brother.
Yeah.
And again, also following a relationship story, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, what are you going to do to succeed in business? Right. And like, let's say her brother's a bit of a Fredo, right?
Yeah.
Like he's kind of a goofball. Like they start out as 12. They start out as two 12-year-old kids who have this whole business together. Right. Yeah. And she's the one running the books or whatever, but he's the one, you know, drawing silly, like, you know, being kind of a clown and being, you know, like he's the salesman or not the salesman, but he is like, he just likes spending time with his older sister. Do you know what I mean? Like he is like the sort of like more naive, you know, heart of the thing. Yeah, right. Sure. And then it's like, to succeed, will this little girl 86 her brother? Do you know what I mean? Like, will she fucking stab her brother in the back to fucking get ahead, right? Because at a certain point, she's like, he's holding me back. Like, you know, like everyone else has these big alliances. And like, I'm stuck with this. And he fucks up. And like, you know, he doesn't like, you know, like again, it would be like, he would be the one who would cook the books to save the, to save the people who didn't have the job or whatever. And she's like, oh my God, I'm in hot water or something like that. And I don't know. I'm trying to think, because if you were to do it something like that, like again, like he's rich Uncle Pennybags. Well, that means he has a brother or a sister, right? Yeah. Like you can't be an uncle unless you have a sibling.
I think his brother was the fuck up, and then Uncle Pennybags. No,
the brother could be the hobo that they meet in the free parking lot.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it would be like Sandy doesn't cut Andy at the last second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And she loses.
Mm-hmm.
But then it would be like she knows what she realizes is rich Uncle Pennybags, was at the same point that she was, and he made the decision to cut a family member or cut his closest friend.
Oh, I like that, because you would do that, and that was the thing that let him shoot up to this.
That
was the moment he became rich Uncle Pennybags. Yeah. Again, I like it being because I also like them, this mysterious hobo in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then he helps them. And then you realize like, oh, because again, and also they heal Mr. Rich Uncle Pennybags' heart because they allow him to reconcile with his brother.
Well, I just keep going to Thimble because the Thimble seems like a simple thing. But it'd be like if his brother had like a thimble or whatever it is this memory. And she realizes.
That's the gift she gives him.
She realizes who the homeless guy is or whatever. Yeah. Or maybe it's just like a janitor. Like he even has a job in the company. Just fucking, but he never talks to his brother or whatever it is. And they lose. And they're getting ready to say goodbye, and like the winner is this douchebag, and they're celebrating, and they're like, "All right, everybody, like, thanks for the competition." And then she comes up to him, is like, "Hey, before I go, I just wanted to give you something." And she gives him the thimble, and he realizes the bad decision he made, and then he has this change of heart, and he's like, "Never mind, Sandy and Andy win." And the guy's like, "What? Sandy and Andy win? Because of a thimble?" And he flips it over, or whatever it is.
And the next, you just do flip web to the next day. The entire company goes bankrupt, just being run by 2 12-year-olds. So they sell children. It to the Chinese.
um, It has to be. I mean, yeah, it's definitely.
But spice. I like that. Okay, so I like this sort of like
it's the brother
tale of siblings.
Well, yeah, because then I get now I'm like, okay, now I can get the game. Like whether or not I can understand what the clear rules are, because I was trying to hang on to the rules because like I didn't have anything else to go on in the middle. But I'm like, okay, now I get it because it's going to be about how much does specifically Sandy and Andy like how much is they're going to start off working really well together, mm-hmm. and then this running the business or the side is going to be difficult, and it's going to be about them essentially keeping their own relationship in this high stress business world up mm-hmm. to the point where yes, in order to win, to do the best thing for the business mm-hmm. is going to be Sandy gets rid of Andy. And she maybe again she has this low point where maybe she's going to do it at the last second in order to win the game. She decides not to. His family is more important. That's why we do this in the first place. Like mm-hmm. I started this because I wanted to run a lemonade stand with my brother. That's why I did this in the first place. And I'm not going to run a lemonade stand without
him. I don't want to run a lemonade empire.
All that money can't buy me happiness the way that hanging out with my brother.
Exactly. Yeah. And he says no. And Rich Uncle Pennybread is like, are you sure? And she's like, yeah. He's like, well, the winner is Mick Douchebag over here. And like, woo! Mm. And Andy's like, thank you so much. And she's like, I don't regret anything. Let's go, bro. And they're about to leave. And she's like, wait 1 second. And then they realize, like in that moment, it'd be in that moment, they should realize that the janitor, whoever it is Rich Uncle Pennybag's mysterious lost brother that nobody speaks about or whatever it is.
I don't know. I feel like they learn it at a certain point. Because it is, again, it's the cautionary tale for her, right? Yeah. Like, it's because you would do it, again, the brother is, like, goofy and eccentric. And it's kind of an idiot fuck-up, but, like, again, in his own way. Like, again, kind of like the brother is. And then, because you do, okay, so here's what's great. Is you do, each of the kids now has a mentor figure, right?
Yeah, right.
Because it's like like idolizes Rich Uncle Pennybags, right? And like she's got like again, she's like he was Forbes 30 under 30. It's like well, no, he was this, he was that. And like he's like really wants
the 40 under 40
and 40 under 40 and 50 under 50
and the 10 under 10 when he was a child.
He was on Forbes. Yeah, he was Forbes. Yeah,
10 under 10.
The 10
under 10. Yeah,
that's just Andy and Andy are. That should be Forbes 10 under 10.
Forbes 10 under 10.
But then he like loves this he like loves goofball weirdo and they met in the parking lot because he can like do sick tricks and like lighter.
Well,
tricks
you want
and shit.
That like act four bad guys close in type moment where each of them gets shitty advice from their mentor, right? Where again, like it's like she's like, oh, my brother's driving me crazy, and Rich Uncle Pennybags is like, siblings, blah. Like you know, like it's like you gotta be a go getter, you gotta cut throats, you gotta blah, blah, blah. And then it's like the and then he's you know he's like, oh, my sister's being mean. It's like, well, you know, like you know, some people just again, it's like they both kind of get poisoned. And against each other a little bit.
What you need is that moment in order for her to get they could learn ahead of time. The only thing I'm trying to get to is like that moment to me plays it would be like if you're talking about like why did Rich Uncle Pennybags choose these two kids with mm-hmm. everybody else. And we do it's like when people make a decision they regret, sometimes the only way to deal with it is to feel justified by seeing somebody else do that. Like if he can get Sandy to drop Andy, if he can get this wonderful girl to drop her older brother, he didn't make a mistake. Like he did what anybody would do. And like so deep down this is why.
Ooh, I like that.
So he like pushes her to that moment.
Like, I
when
like
they
that
get
a
really
lot.
Close and when and when she says no, he would be furious because it's this pain of like she's better than
him.
How
dare you?
Yeah, she's better than him. He can't believe
it. And again, you would do
like what I would do if she was if he was her mentor during this process.
Yeah.
Then I think it would actually play better if she doesn't understand like how could he be so furious? Like I get me losing the game, but why is he so upset that I didn't drop my brother? And then it would snap to her when she realizes like he did the same thing.
And then
he brings it to her and then he's like, you're right, I was wrong. Like, I love you, my brother. Like, you two win this company. And the guy flips the table.
You gotta get that moment that makes everybody cry.
Yeah.
Is when the fucking, you have the guy with the top hat and the monocle and the thing and the hobo with the bundle on his back.
Yeah.
And again, he's ashamed. He doesn't want his brother to see him. And then he doesn't know how to talk to him. And then the two kids have to fucking push him together to reconcile. Yeah. And then you do the fucking crying and they hug each other. Yeah. And then now the company is run by the two of them, maybe. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
you would do is that they're still 12. They can't run the company until they're 18.
Yeah.
So now Rich Uncle Pennybags and his brother are going to run the company until.
And
they're going to mentor them. And now they're run by, now it's the Monopoly Brothers.
Yeah.
The Monopoly Brothers. Hasbros.
The Hasbros. This company, Hasbros.
Okay, now I get the story. Yeah. Like, it's,
that's what you end the pitch to fucking Hasbro on. And now this company has bros.
We'll take our check now.
So there you have it, the story of Monopoly.
I buy it. I dig it.
Yeah.
All right. So to summarize, like if we were to try to log line this bitch, right? Yeah. Like the you would do all right, so Rich Uncle Pennybags is the reclusive, eccentric owner of Pennybags Holdings LLC Incorporated, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he
essentially runs Atlantic City. He runs Atlantic City pretty much.
He's looking for his successor, and he decides to host this competition where he takes 10 business luminaries. Is he a Wall Street tech guy, a tech guy, an economics professor, and this plucky Sandy and Andy, these two 12-year-old kids who run a lemonade stand app.
Yeah.
And they snuck that in there. and he says he each gives them a stake in his company, or each gives them a part of the company to run, and whoever does the best job by the end of this competition, whoever can take out the others or whatever, who can prove that they're cutthroat leader, can get it done.
And if you're going to do maritimes, you can even do this elimination, it's a show, or whatever it is.
Maybe you do make it a reality show.
Oh, yeah. That'd be interesting framing.
It's like Essentially Apprentice.
And then it ends with him being like, maybe I'll run for president. At any rate, these two kids are thrust into this big game. They learn the cutthroat rules of business. They befriend an eccentric hobo in the free parking lot. And across the way, this ambitious young woman, you know, is struggling with her brother and struggling with, you know, how she's going to treat other people. And like, you know, like, and meanwhile, this brother's struggling with his sister.
As it gets harder and tougher, she gets more
the strain dedicated. Is put on there,
she gets more dedicated and driven. Mm-hmm. And he gets less sure as he's unhappy about their relationship or how his sister's becoming. Yeah. Again, it's like once push comes to shove, she cares more about business than him. And he cares more about her than business. And eventually she's going to realize that's wrong. Right.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, the brother, I think, is getting, we have to figure, there's a whole other arc with the brother, becoming self-pitying and, you know, like, again, like, you know, just like kind of a slacker.
Yeah, but we don't do that work until Hasbro cuts us a check.
Yeah. You get that half when we get our half.
He just starts riding the rails.
Yeah. You should totally do a scene where he goes train jumping with the, so anyway, these two kids grow up a little bit. They fall apart. They're driven away from each other, but then they come back together. And again, the ultimate moral test being the girl, she refuses to stab her brother in the back, and the brother does something that's likewise, you know, and then Rich Uncle Pennybags reconciles with his brother because more important than money is family.
Yeah.
And that's what Monopoly's about. Because at the end of the day, in Monopoly, it's all the money is fake. The point is the game that you're playing with your family.
Oh my God, yes.
Boom! Headshot!
Boom!
Headshot!
Dunked it from half court.
From half court, from downtown. God. All right, so there it is.
I think that's Monopoly, everybody.
That's the Monopoly movie.
I'm just waiting for, like, we've done five of these, Freddy. Where's our freaking checks,
where's our
man?
Money?
Yeah,
money?
You know, I'm I'll
like,
check.
We don't even have we don't even have coffee brought to us for this podcast.
That's
like, I feel like
point.
We brought,
look into
I feel
it.
Like
I'm
we brought some
that.
good
we're dropping
stuff
fire.
We're still waiting on
these
that Jar Jar money.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there are royalties, innumerable royalties owed to us, I'm sure. But in the meantime, I think that'll wrap it up for us here.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Follow us on social media. We're Rocket Jump Tweet. And Will's not on Twitter.
I'm Twitterless Will.
And Matt
I'm in
L,
the wind.
Matt L. Arnold. I'm F. Wong. Everybody, thank you very much. We will
thank you, everybody.
See you and smell ya next week.
Adios.